Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Winter's coming. The Caribbean sounds nice. How about Cuba? For decades, it's been off limits. Americans are banned by U.S. law from traveling to Cuba. The only exceptions, as of this year, are Cuban Americans who can now go visit their families. Last week, the House held a hearing on lifting the travel ban for all to Cuba. Just as a bad new human rights report came out this hour, On Point, is it time to open the American floodgates for travel to Cuba? You can join the conversation. Have you already snuck around the regulations or found a way through and made a trip? What did you see? Is it time for the travel ban to go? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We are going to hear a big range of views this hour. We'll start in Washington with Leslie Clark, national correspondent for the Miami Herald. She's been covering the hearings on Cuba travel. Leslie Clark, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. So we've got, legislation introduced in both the House and the Senate to end the travel ban for U.S. citizens. I guess currently visitors to Cuba, American visitors, have to have a license from the Treasury Department for government or journalistic or religious or humanitarian purposes. But for most people, Leslie, it's been a pretty flat ban.
Yeah, absolutely. There are about, I think it's almost 20 different ways that Americans can travel legally to Cuba. But like you said, you've got to pretty much get a permit from the Treasury Department and able to go for educational, religious, or other reasons.
Let's listen to a little bit of the back and forth. There's been criticism for a long time of lifting the ban, but also a turn in that tone. But first, here's Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Lehtinen of Florida, born in Cuba, saying at the hearings the ban should stay.
Why choose to vacation off the backs of forced slave labor of the oppressed Cuban people who are denied access to the very tourist hotels you want to flock to?
Slave labor in the hotels doesn't sound too good, but here was the committee chairman Howard Berman, a Democrat of California, arguing the issue is less about the Castro brothers and more about opportunities.
Letting U.S. citizens travel to Cuba is not a gift to the Castros. It is in our national interest. Waiting for a concession from Havana before we do something on behalf of our own citizens perversely puts the Cuban government in charge of that decision.
Leslie Clark, in your reporting and that of others, we're seeing that there may be more weight behind this push this time than before. What's changed here? What's changing, Leslie?
Well, I think you've got a couple things changing with the fact that you've got both houses of Congress controlled by Democrats who have traditionally favored greater engagement with Cuba. You also have a president in the White House who obviously favors greater engagement with Cuba. He's made a few small steps. Some would argue he's gone too far. Others would argue he hasn't gone far enough in terms of extending a hand and opening things up with Cuba.
Now, already this spring in the Obama era, there was an opening for Cuban Americans. Explain what happened then.
Correct. Cuban Americans have been able to travel to Cuba, people with family on the island, and the Bush administration in 2004 had tightened that, only allowing people to be able to, Cuban Americans, to travel every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Obama administration changed that regulation in April and allowed unrestricted travel for Cuban Americans.
And how's that going? Are there been a lot of flights added out of Miami to Havana and elsewhere? Is it thick traffic?
Yeah, it's been hugely popular. All of the travel agents say they're incredibly booked, and all the flights down there seem to be very full of people heading down there.
What are the expectations if the travel ban were to be lifted for all Americans? Cuba's a big Caribbean island. There's a long history, pre-revolution, of Americans visiting there. What kind of pictures are painted of what we might see in terms of American travel flows to Cuba?
Well, I think a lot of people are questioning in the past when the U.S. has made overtures to Cuba, what the Cubans have done in reply. And so I guess there's a question about whether or not they're going to give a lot of people visas to travel there. And depending on which side you're listening to, you hear that, you know, it's going to be terrific, that there's a lot of family-owned restaurants, families that are allowed to have restaurants in their homes where people can go and visit, or that there isn't enough tourist infrastructure.
I mean, but tourists from around the world have been coming to Cuba. It's quite popular with Europeans and others for a long time now. There is a substantial tourism industry there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of their biggest supporters of their economy down there is the tourism industry. You can go there from, you know, just about every other country in the world.
I've seen numbers that get up into the millions of the potential number of Americans per year, I believe, that imagine might visit Cuba.
Yeah, I've seen some estimates there would be about 2 million. There are a number of Florida ports of call that are already getting interested in that, including in Fort Lauderdale and Tampa, interested in having flights to Cuba. There are entrepreneurs interested in having ferries and boats to Cuba. So there's definitely a lot of interest. The travel agency or the Orbitz, the online travel agency, has started a petition, and they say they've already contacted about 100,000 signatures of people who would be interested in traveling to Cuba.
Now, Cuban Americans, many of whom decades back fled Cuba when Fidel Castro came to power, have traditionally been big opponents of this. But the latest survey numbers that I've seen are changing. Here's one from this spring, I guess, from Ben Dixon and Associates, Hispanic polling firm, saying 59% of Cuban Americans think the 46-year-old travel ban should be removed. That's an 18% swing in just a matter of a couple of years, as they report that. That's a big change.
Yeah, that's definitely been a point of argument for the proponents of opening up Cuba to travel. They argue that, you know, it's been 50 years and this hasn't worked, so let's try something different, and that actually the Cuban-American community down in Miami is more wanting to open it up to travel. However, that sort of counters by the fact that the three Cuban-American members of Congress from Miami who were reelected in 2008 are staunchly against opening up.
We saw an interesting mix of positions last week. Retired U.S. General Barry McCaffrey, former U.S. drug czar, was in favor of lifting the travel ban. Why?
Well, like I said, a lot of people he argues in particular that Cuba doesn't represent any sort of a national security threat to the United States anymore. The Cold War is over, and that it's time to begin to engage. And he also brings up a point that when and if the Castros retire or leave the scene, that the United States would be better off by having contacts on the island and by having good relations with the island to sort of help out with the transition.
So embrace the kind of cultural exchange that comes along with visitors, with travel.
Yeah, and he also mentioned possibly, you know, prevent another happening like the Mariel boat lift when the Cubans sent over boatloads of Cubans arriving on the United States shores.
Leslie Clark with the Miami Herald, the national correspondent with us from Washington today, who covered the hearings last week. Last question, what's the timetable here? When might we see this come up for serious action?
Howard Berman, the chairman of the House Committee, says he'd like to bring up the bill for a markup, which means they'd have another contentious hearing, more than likely, in the spring. So any action on it would likely wait to the spring, and it seems like Congress is busy with health care and everything else.
I'd say, but this up on the rails as it has not been in a long time, maybe ever. Leslie, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Joining us right now from New York is Nick Steinberg with Human Rights Watch. He's lead author of a report out last week on Cuba titled New Castro, Same Cuba, referring to Raul Castro having taken over from Fidel as his health failed. We've got that full report, links to it at our website, onpointradio.org, and it's pretty tough on the human rights picture there. Nick, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Some thought maybe under a new titular leader, Raul Castro, things might change for the better. Your report saying no. What did you find?
Well, it's been more than 3 years since Fidel Castro handed over power to Raul Castro. And our report found that in those 3 years, Raul Castro has left Cuba's repressive machinery fully intact and fully active as well, and that Cuba remains the only place in this hemisphere that represses virtually all forms of political dissent. So we didn't see any major change in the human rights record of Cuba. The only change that we see is a slight change in the tactics used. In particular, Raul Castro tends to rely on a dangerousness provision that was in the criminal code for long before he came to power. But basically, this provision allows the government to arrest people before they've committed any crime, on the suspicion that they may commit a crime in the future. So it's a pretty Orwellian law. And we documented 40 cases under Raul Castro in which the government has used this dangerousness provision to lock up political prisoners.
Your America's Watch director, Jose Miguel Vivanco, says Cubans who dare to criticize the government live in perpetual fear. And yet, even with this report, Nick, your organization is supporting lifting the travel ban. Why are you favoring lifting the ban when you're continuing to find this kind of human rights record?
Well, we think that the U.S. policy remains one of the biggest obstacles to change in Cuba. When we look at the record of the embargo, of which the travel ban is just one part, right? So there's the travel ban and then the embargo on trade. We see a policy that over 50 years, nearly 50 years, has failed in any way to improve the human rights record in Cuba. And so our what we call for is for the U.S. to really replace the failed embargo policy with a multilateral effective approach that involves working with countries in Europe, with Canada, with Latin America. And the travel ban is part of that. We think that lifting the travel ban will be a step in the right direction.
You think lifting the ban might actually eventually help improve the human rights picture there?
Well, the problem with the U.S. embargo policy is as it stands right now, what it does is it gives the Castro brothers, now Raul Castro, an excuse for their problems and a pretext for their abuses. So by taking away the travel ban, you really take away the Castro's major argument for repression.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about lifting the U.S. travel ban to Cuba and what's going on in the land of the Castro brothers. A new human rights report says it's no better under Raul Castro, but the organization that puts it out, Human Rights Watch, says lift the travel ban anyway. Hearings last week in the House about this very subject, James Kaysen, former chief of the U.S. Special Interest Section in Havana, 2002 to 2005, our ambassador equivalent under George W. Bush, argued opening up travel won't change politics on the ground in Cuba.
Tourism and trade have not brought down a totalitarian regime anywhere in history. That's because dictators refuse to let tourism do its alleged subversive work. If Castro thought that he could not control tourism, he simply wouldn't allow them in.
But here's a supporter of Cuban political prisoners, Miriam Leyva, testifying last Thursday via video conference link from Havana before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, arguing America should lift the ban.
Americans and Cubans have to stand up to the 21st century and restart our walks together, respecting the rights of our peoples, facilitating the path towards democracy, not waiting for Cuban authorities' gesture, but being proactive. We hope to greet you soon in Havana when all Americans could visit Cuba.
A voice from Havana ready to greet an influx of Americans. Nick Steinberg joins us from New York. He's with Human Rights Watch, lead author of a report out last week on human rights in Cuba titled New Castro, Same Cuba. You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. With me now in the studio is Anita Snow, former Havana bureau chief for the Associated Press, stepped down in August after 10 years on the job there. She's currently a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. Anita Snow, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tom.
You spent many years in Havana. You've seen this from the inside, the tourism industry there, who comes, who doesn't, and the relative paucity of Americans there, U.S. citizens. What do you think about this? How do you look at the question of whether or not the ban should be lifted?
Well, I can tell you what average Cubans would love to see Americans there, more Americans. They love Americans. They love to talk to them about the U.S. Pretty much everybody has a relative in Miami or somewhere in the U.S. They're very curious. They're curious about how we live, what we think, you know, how much money do you make, and about movies and everything. So I think average Cubans would love to see more Americans come there.
So there's a cultural openness to it. What about the Cuban government? If the U.S. lifted the travel ban, do you think the Cuban government would throw the doors wide open? The sort of vestiges of memory from pre-revolutionary Havana are not entirely beautiful about the American imprint there.
Well, I think there would be some controls because 2 million Americans are not going to fit into Cuba all at once. There just aren't enough hotel rooms, there aren't enough, you know, structure. And I think the prospect of all of those Americans in Cuba might scare the communist government a little bit. If we as American believe in the democratization power of ideas and lifestyles, I could see why that would be the case, why it could be a little bit scary.
Just a whole lot of Americans sitting around on long afternoons talking about you name it.
Yeah, like talking about how they live, talking with Cubans about how they live and what's a union and and you know you could say things about the president and not go to jail. So I think what would happen is I think the communist government would set some controls on the number of visas issued. The way it is now, anybody who wants to come to Cuba as a tourist can just buy a tourist card at the airport.
From anywhere else in the world, on their way in.
Mexico and Canada. But I think in the case of Americans, there would be a limit, and the excuse would be because of a lack of hotel rooms.
Let's get some listeners in right here from Titusville, Florida. Norm is calling. Hi, Norm. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Well, what do you think, Norm?
Well, I went to Cuba in August 2001. In fact, I got back September 10th, 2001. And I went as a part of a health tour. And, well, let me just say this, that I think that the embargo, I mean, dealing just with the embargo is just absolutely crazy. And, in fact, it has made the Cubans a lot stronger. But then again, let me just, from a health care point of view, the embargo itself has done a great favor to the Cubans in the sense that what is being embargoed there is from Cuba is all the garbage foods that we eat. I mean, you go there, food was great.
You're talking about the trade embargo there, Norm, which has stood right alongside the travel ban. And what about travel itself? Do you think it would be good for?
Oh, absolutely! Absolutely. I had a wonderful time. I do have family there that. In fact, I had a cousin there who fought in the army there, went to Angola. I thought that the travel ban, the Cubans, I found that just what your guest said, that they were wonderful people, very interested in the United, love Americans, and I was surprised at how they talked about Castro. It was easy to get around.
Talk about Castro in what way, Norm? Critically or not?
Critically. I mean, some of you said he was crazy. You know, and you hear this in the little cocoa cabs they had there, and in some of the little restaurants that they have there.
Right. So you say lift the ban. Bottom line, lift the ban. I'm hearing.
Lift the ban, and in terms of the embargo has made the Cubans a lot stronger because what it's done is made them a lot healthier. They're not getting the junk food that we get that we're eating. I mean, you get
that's funny. No Twinkies. So there we go. Norm, thank you. Let me get one more right here from Stamford, Connecticut. Andrew, you're on the air.
Yes, my daughter has an American visa and is studying at the University of Havana as we speak.
Hmm.
She's been there about 4 months.
Okay.
She says that the people are wonderful, the music is great, the food is good. And this is a girl who's going to school in New Orleans. However, she lives like the Cubans do, and they run out of food towards the end of the month. And she, who has been in third world countries, this is the only place where she's ever been hungry.
Wow, actually hungry at the end of the month.
Hungry at the end of the month. Now, if you go to the tourist areas, which are 10 times more expensive than the local country areas, there is plenty of food. But there's not food for the people or for the students.
Andrew, thank you very much for that report and your observation. Anita, you lived there for 10 years. Does that ring true to you?
Well, particularly if you're living primarily on a ration card, which it sounds like this young woman was living on a ration card.
As a student, perhaps.
As a student. The ration only provides about maybe a half or maybe a little bit more than that of your monthly food requirements. So with an average salary, which is only about $20, you buy everything else.
That means some scratching around.
Yeah, there's
scraping.
A lot of scratching around. I mean, Cuban housewives are extremely extremely resourceful. I mean, I have this great appreciation for these women who'd figure out, and they figure it out, how to feed their families every month. But it's hard, you know. And even you can buy vegetables at these farmers markets, and for foreigners they're quite cheap, but for Cubans they're quite expensive.
I want to talk about that, whether there's resentment of what's available for foreign visitors in Cuba. But joining us right now from his office in Paterson, New Jersey, is U.S. Congressman William Bill Pascrell. He's a Democrat representing New Jersey's 8th Congressional District, supports keeping the U.S. ban on travel to Cuba. He signed a letter along with 52 other Democrats to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi early this month, aiming to blunt efforts to lift the travel ban. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Tom.
All of the above. Why do you favor keeping the travel ban in place on U.S. citizens?
I don't think there's been much of a change. I think there's still a hardline communist state in Cuba. Has a poor record on human rights, doesn't seem to be changing it. There have been a few fringe changes in this regime under Brother Raul, but I don't really see any changes. And so I support the Obama administration's continued negotiations with the Cuban regime on the issues of migration and postal services, but it's clear that I think we could be moving in the right direction, but I think much has to be done yet. The administration's position not to lift the travel ban, which you're directly addressing, or to lift the embargo until Cuba makes some significant progress, I think is necessary at this point. And I don't believe in normalization of relations with Cuba until they become, I'll forget, the 90 miles off the shore. We're not talking about somebody in the middle of Asia. We're talking about 90 miles off our shore. We know what's happened 40 years ago. Not that we're going to relive the past. We want to look to the future. I'm trying to construct in my own mind a new model to approach Cuba, but at the same time, there's some very basic things that they need to do and they haven't done.
You know, people argue that, well, we've tried the sort of seal them off strategy for, as you say, 40 plus years now, and it hasn't worked. And then I'm looking here, your fellow Democrat, Congressman Bill Delahunt, a Democrat in Massachusetts, says it's an offense to common sense to deny the American people the right to travel to Cuba when they have the right to travel to North Korea, to Iran. What about those two?
Well, there are some family exceptions, as you know, that exist right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see any real change, and I have the greatest respect for Bill Delahunt. He's a very thoughtful congressman from Massachusetts. But I disagree with him that this means that we need to go 180 degrees or change the policy altogether. I don't see enough changes within the basic things that I'm concerned about as a policymaker in the United States Congress for me to say, well, reverse and go back and let there'd be a free flow of folks going back and forth from Cuba to the United States. I don't think we're at that point yet, Tom. Mm. Do I hope to get to that point? I hope the country gets to that point. But we're not there yet, and I don't think Cuba's made enough effort to make the change. Just to increase trade or to have more travel in and of itself sounds good, but to put it in the context of 40 years of suppression and repression, to me, it's obvious that there needs to be changes.
Congressman, let's hear from a U.S. citizen here. Mary in Providence, Rhode Island. You're on the air with Congressman Bill Pascrell.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. And
yeah.
There's 2 points I want to make. The first is that I find in these conversations I get very offended because we don't talk enough about, and this is not to excuse the regime of the Castros, but we don't talk enough about the history of Cuba and what the extreme human rights abuses under the Batista regime.
I'm and not supporting the Batista regime in any way, shape, or form.
I understand that. I think we need to acknowledge that we may really vilify the Castros, but they were fighting against some pretty nasty human rights abuses. The second part is that I feel that the United States banning its own citizens from traveling anywhere is also a form of human rights violation. So I just wanted to see what you thought about that. Thanks so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary. Interesting point. Congressman, what about American rights here to travel freely in the world? I mean, that is part of, supposed to be part of our package.
I think that this is a diplomatic State Department presidential decision based on what folks are knowledgeable of concerning the other country. This is not just another country, though. This is 90 miles off our shore. So we need to pay particular attention to what goes on there, just as we have a very sensitive relationship now with Mexico for different reasons. And it would seem to me that the Mexican regime is attempting to improve the history of human rights violations in Mexico. And I don't see anything even near there. I'm approaching that position.
Happening in Cuba. Nick Steinberg with Human Rights Watch is with us in New York, Congressman. Nick, what would you say to Congressman Pascrell and his argument for keeping the ban on from a human rights perspective?
From a human rights perspective, there's nothing that would be better for the Castros than leaving the embargo and the travel ban in place. Not changing anything helps the Castros. It plays into exactly the narrative that they've manipulated for years and years of being a Latin American David standing up to an American superpower Goliath. And so the idea that lifting the travel ban will in some way, you know, reward the Castros is just a false equivalent. So I think one important point, let's be completely clear that we don't think that lifting the travel ban will immediately, you know, solve all the human rights problems in Cuba. Mm-hmm. To the contrary. But we do think that lifting the travel ban and eventually replacing the failed embargo policy will take away the Castro's argument for oppression, and it will make it a lot harder for other governments besides the U.S., European governments, Latin American governments, to blame the U.S. embargo for Cuba's problems right now.
I've only got the congressman for another minute. Let me hear from him on that front, if you would, Nick.
This is all well and good. But, here there are folks being put in jail for what they're writing, even on websites. It can lead to, as we pointed out in the letter to the speaker, it could lead to a 20-year prison term. And by the way, the Internet access is restricted to 1.3% of the population. Come on, give me a break. If there isn't any changes to that, then what are we talking about here? Just a monetary exchange of sorts? What is it? Cuba going to become better because Americans are allowed to go there? You got to be joking me. There is nothing in this, and you talk about the history of Cuba. There is nothing in the history of Cuba in the last 40 to 50 years, and we know that Batista had a bad dictatorial government. I'm not defending that whatsoever. But we've gone from the frying pan into the fire, regardless of what you call it, regardless of how you define it. And they have to change their ways, and we can go halfway, but this is a country that doesn't want to go halfway. They haven't even left the island yet in order to approach the United States, and that's what they'll have to do for us to have a different policy.
Congressman William Pascrell from the 8th Congressional District in New Jersey, Democrat there. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us today.
My honor to be with you. Have a great holiday.
You too. Thanks so much for joining us. Anita Snow, Nick Steinberg, please stand by. We're looking at lifting the U.S. travel ban to Cuba. The yes, the no of it behind me right now. The music festival, famously in Cuba, in Havana, just organized recently to reach out to artists from across Latin America. Create a kind of a stir. Should there be Americans there? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about lifting the U.S. travel ban to Cuba and what's going on in the land of the Castro brothers. There are hearings on Capitol Hill and a big new push with more support than we've seen before to allow Americans to go to travel freely to Cuba. Nick Steinberg is with us from Human Rights Watch in New York. He's the lead author of the new Castro Same Cuba report, critical report on human rights that came out last week. Anita Snow is with me in the studio, former Havana bureau chief for the Associated Press, stepped out of that role in August after 10 years there. Let's get a call right now from Michael in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. What do you know, Michael?
I just returned from Cuba on Saturday I was in Cuba as part of the Eastern Mass Senior Softball Association trip there. We had four teams in Cuba playing softball against four Cuban teams for seven games.
Senior softball players. This is like some kind of a friendship tournament.
Yes, it was a friendship tournament. We played 22 competitive games together. We won 10, they won 12, and then at the end we played six friendlies in which we played with teams made up half of Cuban players and half with American players.
That's amazing. So these are baseball old-timers running around the diamond in Cuba, and what did you think on the field and off?
I'm not going to accept old-timers.
Okay.
we're ball players. And
okay.
Great competition.
Good for
just
you.
Like the Cubans, we all grew up playing baseball. None of us could remember when we first learned how to play baseball. It was just something we've always done, and as soon as we got out onto the field together, we weren't old-timers. We were a bunch of 12-year-olds really enjoying a game that we always loved.
So what do you say, lift the travel ban or not, Michael?
I think it's clearly time to lift the travel ban. I must take strong exception with something the congressman said, and that is that not having more Americans in Cuba, having more Americans in Cuba won't make a big difference. I genuinely believe it will make a big difference. The Cubans are now isolated. They only get a very limited perspective of what's going on in the world. By having more Americans there and a free exchange of ideas with Americans, they will have a much broader perspective on what's going on everywhere, and they will have the opportunity to just be more in charge of their own destiny on their own island.
So play some baseball and lift the ban, you say, Michael, and we've got it. I appreciate that. Let me get another perspective right here from Fairfield, Iowa, and Franklin. Hello, Franklin. You're on the air.
Good morning, Tommy. Thank you for having me. I'm Cuban. I was born Cuban, and I'm now an American citizen.
Okay.
And I was able to go to Cuba for the first time in so many years in 2003, then 2005, and I just returned from Cuba 2 months ago.
Okay.
The situation in Cuba right now is very, very sad for just about everyone, not only the ones that live there, for everyone that goes and visits there and see the misery, the starvation, the hunger, everything that is just describing one word, misery and suffering. This embargo is not proven anything politically or economically, nothing. The only thing it has proven is that a schizophrenic mind, such as that of Castro and now his brother, have been demonstrating to the world that they have more power and what it takes to bring down the name of the United States. They have brought the value of the dollar in Cuba down. How much longer that the United States is going to wait for it? Kennedy.
So, Frank, let me ask you, though. You say there's misery there. Would lifting the travel ban then be good or bad?
It will help, at least if we are talking about human rights, to help the ultimate people that are paying for this, the Cuban mothers, the Cuban children, the Cuban family is the one that is suffering in the name of something that they don't even understand.
So you think more Americans traveling there would be a good thing or not?
It will be. You know why? Because there is a lot of people here in America that think that Castro is the best thing that happened to the world and is the only one that has stood up against the American government.
Mm.
And that is a mistake that some Americans have here. They should go there and stay there. I have friends here in this town that they say that they're communists. They don't know what communist is. It's good to be called himself a communist when you have a $25,000 checking account and investments and all that.
Franklin, we've got the perspective loud and clear, and I thank you very much for your call. Anita Snow, there's a Cuban-American, been recently back and several times back, and says he sees straight-up misery there. I first wonder how you respond to that description of life in Cuba. And then how does that factor? In some part that may well be true. Is there something off-putting about tourists sort of flouncing around in Havana in nice hotels when there's real difficulty in Cuba, or is that just like any other third world situation?
Off-putting for the Cubans?
Maybe for the Cubans, maybe in general. I mean, we saw that back in the 1950s. Americans swanning in to have a great time in Havana when there was things weren't so great for a lot of Cubans then either. The contrast can be hard on the eye sometime. But first, just this issue of misery. Do you accept Franklin's characterization?
I don't know if I would say. I mean, Haiti is misery. I've been to Haiti, and Haiti's a true misery. There are a lot of people having a real hard time in Cuba. Cuba's not exactly like Haiti. But yeah, it's hard. But and also traveling to Mexico is pretty hard on the eyes too. I mean, I don't know if you go in the airport on the bus from the airport in Cancun to your hotel, you're going to see a lot of poor people. You're going to see shacks. I mean, and you're going to see that in Cuba in the countryside as well. And you're going to see people who are wearing ragged clothes. And you're going to see people, you know, kids asking you for money and stuff. Although actually in Cuba, that's less common than in Mexico. But I think having more tourists in Cuba regularly would create job opportunities, kind of informal job opportunities for Cubans who become informal guides, or they have restaurants in their homes, or they rent rooms in their homes for people to stay the night.
Now you say informal. Is that because the Cuban state owns the main tourism industry institutions there, establishments?
Yes, that's correct. The Cuban government controls about 95% of the economy. There are some folks who have licenses who can legally operate these private restaurants and legally operate or rent out some rooms in their homes. And then there's people who do it without the license.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting into the black market or the informal economy, if you were. There's a lot of informal economy there. And, you know, even a few dollars a week can really change somebody's life in Cuba. But I think the thing about the travel ban, which I think is more interesting, well, first of all, why do we have it? I'm not quite sure what the reasoning was behind it, except to strangle
mm-hmm.
the Cuban government.
On every front.
To strangle the Cuban government, which then would cause more misery to the Cuban people, which would force them to overthrow the Cuban government. This was the logic behind the embargo in the very beginning, and I guess that's what it is today as well. But the problem with it, it does not allow Americans to frame the discussion there. It allows the communist government mm-hmm. is framing the entire debate in Cuba mm-hmm. without American. I think if you had American
with the banners
voices
and the slogans
there,
and the headlines,
exactly, mm-hmm. you know, and this is what you hear, and this is what you see on television, and this is what you hear on the radio, and this is what you hear in school, and this is what you hear at work, and this is what you hear from your neighbors. So you don't have Cuban, you don't have American voices in there. So that's a problem.
That would be a change. Nick Steinberg, what about this issue of the Cuban government owning such a big portion of the sort of tourism industry or establishment in Cuba? You know, critics say, well, if you travel to Cuba, you're putting money in the coffers of the Castro regime, which, you know, many would call oppressive, and that looks wrong. As a human rights guy, what do you say to that?
Well, look, there's no question that the Cuban government controls most forms of employment in Cuba. And in fact, to work without government permission on the black market or to work as a self-employed person without the right papers puts you at huge risk in Cuba. However, we don't think that that's reason enough to prevent the travel of Americans to Cuba. And really, I think that the issue is almost too narrow in only thinking about the travel ban. We
mm-hmm.
need to think bigger. We need to think of the whole embargo, and we need to think about what pressure might work on the Castro government. And really what we think is the only pressure that could ever work on the Castro government would be pressure coming from more than just the U.S. It would have to come from many countries. And really what we propose is that the U.S., Europe, Canada, and Latin American countries get together and press Cuba on just one issue, and that's the release of all political prisoners. And that if Cuba does not meet that one demand, that they face, rather than these very sweeping and indiscriminate
mm-hmm.
punishments of the embargo, targeted sanctions from this group that are focused like a scalpel on the government rather than a sledgehammer, which is what we have now. And really, you know, the one thing we haven't talked about today is that the embargo really does impose indiscriminate hardship on the Cuban people. It affects everyone in Cuba. And that's, you know, something that the government in Cuba, as Anita was saying, makes very clear. It's on the, when I was in Cuba, this is something that's on the radio every day. It's on billboards when you drive around. It's in the newspapers. And the government never lets people forget this, which is why when you talk to people in Cuba, what they say, and this is in some of the testimony that you played in Congress last week, they say, please, you know, lift this. Take away this excuse of the government, because if you take away this excuse, then the government has to explain why people are in the conditions that one of your callers talked about.
Let me hear from Larry in Hartford, Connecticut. Larry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Hi. Yeah.
I think it's important, as someone who has been to Cuba several times for medical care, to give a few facts. One,
were you giving or receiving medical care, Larry?
Oh, we were supporting medical care for the people of Cuba.
And okay.
This, mm-hmm. this has been true of many, many doctors. And the first mm-hmm. very simple observation is that when you look at children on the street, they appear healthy. When you look at the statistics, it's accepted worldwide that their infant mortality rate is not anywhere near Haiti. In fact, it's the direct opposite and better than in the United States. The medical care, they have world-renowned medical institutions from which people even from Europe come at times for some specialties. And so I think it's important for your speakers, when they talk about human rights, to also speak about the rights for medical care, for housing, and for food. And despite the complaints about rationing, fact is that if people get something rather than nothing, as in many countries in Latin America, then this is something that your consultants, I think, should also consider.
Larry, we hear it, and it sounds that you're a sympathetic visitor. In that perspective, do you favor lifting the U.S. travel ban or
Absolutely.
Not?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that, Tom. Everything should be lifted. The embargo is illegal. The travel ban is illegal on United States citizens, as has been many times testified. But most of all, when your commentators talk about human rights, they need to look at the official records of the World Health Organization. They need to see that when there's a bad hurricane, the Cuban government evacuates people, even their TVs and mattresses, and that's why their mortality is less than most countries when it comes to storms.
Larry, our time is short. Let me pick it up first with Nick Steinberg. Nick, there's a kind of challenge to your definition of human rights, I guess, from our caller, Larry.
We acknowledge in the report, Larry, I would encourage you to look at the report, the progress that organizations like you talk about, the World Health Organization and UNICEF, have pointed out that Cuba has made in areas like reducing infant mortality and achieving universal literacy. That said, we don't think that achieving universal literacy excuses, for example, not allowing people to read certain things or throwing people in jail for writing certain things. So while we're willing to acknowledge that these achievements by the Cuban government, we also don't think that that excuses the other abuses that we point out in this report.
Anita, step back with us for a minute here. You know, there was a lot of talk about Cuba's future when Fidel's health appeared to be failing and Raul stepped up. Now Raul's there. Nick's human rights report says no change on the human rights front. But what kind of big expectations are growing of the post-Fidel, post-Raul? It has to come sometime. Does this just go on? Does it just another generation steps into their shoes, their boots, and takes it on? Or are we on the cusp of some major change in Cuba? How would Americans in the streets maybe factor into that coming era?
Well, I don't sense that we're on the cusp of any great change, to be perfectly mm-hmm. honest. I mean, I think the Communist Party has a pretty good handle on society.
Control-wise? Or
oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. No, control-wise. Block by block, every block has a block captain, and it's all organized all the way up to the top. It's mm-hmm. it's quite interesting. You know, Raul's going to pass away someday, obviously. Who's going to follow him? Who knows? There's really nobody, you know, lined up there. I think the military could play a role. And I think if the U.S. had a dialogue going with Cuba, it would give the U.S. a better chance of having some influence eventually in Cuba's future. Now, I was going to mention something because Nick was talking about how the embargo hasn't worked and how the travel ban hasn't worked. Mm. And I was looking at the recommendations in the human rights report, and I'm kind of skeptical of the recommendations because I'm not sure if those recommendations are going to work either.
Such as?
Well, we're talking about what's being recommended is a multilateral pressure on the Cuban government mm-hmm. to release all these folks. I don't think it's going to work. Cuba's like one of the most independent or if the most independent country in the world. They don't care.
Independent-minded.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're also they don't belong to the World Health. I mean, they don't belong to the World Bank. They don't belong to IMF. So these traditional ways of pressuring a country don't work. And quite frankly, I don't think the EU is going to sign on to this. Most Latin American countries are Canada. I think what we need is some diplomatic engagement of some sort, which has worked some in the past to help release some prisoners.
Well, it may be that some of that diplomatic engagement, if this goes through, happens in the street, happens from between ordinary citizens, Americans and Cubans. We will see and see before too long. Very interesting conversation. I'm grateful to each of you for helping us mount it today. Nick Steinberg with the Human Rights Watch. Your report is up at our website, onpointradio.org. Thank you, Nick, for joining us from New York.
Thanks, Tom.
And Anita Snow, former AP Bureau Chief in Havana. Anita, thanks so much for coming in today.
That was my pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.